Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Hello and welcome in to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Hoppin, joined as always by my co-host, Andrew Mackins, and our producer, Garner. Fellas, what's going on tonight? How you doing? Are you still alive in all of your 87 leagues that you're in?
It's a war of attrition, Sam. So started at 14. Now it was in the playoffs in 7, and now I'm in the semis in 4 of 7. So I expect over the next 2 weeks to be in 2 championships and win one of those. It's just math.
Well,
you know about
that'll
math.
That'll do it. Yeah, I love math. I love math. Math is good. Garner, how are your teams looking right now?
Pretty good overall. The 3 that I care about, the 1 that I'm in the playoffs, I advanced to the next round. The 1 where I actually had a game in the toilet bowl, I won, so I can't be the sacko. But of course, in our league of record, I got the bye week in the toilet bowl. And I had the high score of the week and my highest score of the year, but it doesn't matter.
That is something else. That is not great from fantasy football. My run-in, Scott Fishbowl, unfortunately came to an end. I also lost in the first round of the Dynasty League, one of the Dynasty Leagues that I'm in, thanks to Baker putting up 30-plus points on Monday Night Football. Beat out by like 2 points because of that. But I had Baker over 1.5 passing touchdowns, so I'll take that as the silver lining for the nice.
But
today we are going to do all of our regular scheduled segments, and then we're going to talk about busts. So some players that stood out to us as guys that did not perform up to expectations, severely underperformed relative to their ADP, and talk a little buy or sell with them, whether we think that their bust is something that might continue with them in the future or is just a bit of an aberration. But before we do that, we've got our kickoff question, Mental Health Minute, and DiGiorno Player of the Week. So without further ado, let's kick things off.
And this game is underway.
We're still in the midst of the fantasy football playoffs, and that means there's some crucial lineup decisions to be made. So our kickoff question today is, who is someone from week 14 that you were high or low on going into the week that in the semifinals for the fantasy playoffs you're changing your mind on? And I'm going to start here with Miles Sanders, because I've been down on him quite a bit this season. He's put up games of under 20 points the last several weeks that he's played, but finally got what looked to be like a workhorse role. He was above an 80% snap share for the first time since week 5, which is exceptional. It looks like Jordan Howard really isn't much of a factor, if at all a factor, in the Eagles offense despite signing them. It certainly helped that the Eagles were ahead for the majority of the game, so they could, you know, they had a little bit more flexibility and they weren't catching up and trying to play catch up with Jalen Hurts under center. It was also encouraging to see Sanders perform so well, because there's always this a bit of a myth that running quarterbacks are going to just torpedo the value of running backs on their team. So that was especially encouraging. They have matchups against the Arizona Cardinals and Dallas Cowboys, so I think those are two games that they can certainly be competitive in. I wouldn't expect them to be falling behind major double digits early, and will keep Sanders involved and hopefully can continue to find the end zone as much as he did this past week.
It's funny because in our league of record, I benched him, and knowing like this is, you know, I'm just not trusting him anymore. I'm not trusting him. And then he goes off. And fortunately for me, I had the first round bye in this bracket. So I had the chance to fuck up. So now I can do the opposite in the semis and hopefully it goes my way this week. And I had Miles Sanders for this as well, Sam. So I was smiling right when you said it. It's funny because I was, like I said, totally against him. New Orleans Saints defense is good again. And then, of course, the New Orleans Saints defense doesn't show up. And it has made me tilt for the last like 3-4 years on various occasions. But the one thing I took away from Sunday was actually a friend of the pod, Justin Mandero. He mentioned when I was chatting with him on our pregame show that Jalen Hurts just makes the offense different. And that really opened up the door for Miles Sanders. So, I mean, yes, Miles Sanders did break off like a huge touchdown run, which really pads those numbers. But I mean, if they did it against the Saints defense, I have hope, enough hope to put him in my starting lineup for week 15.
Yeah. And on the flip side of this, since, you know, we're both talking about Miles Sanders, I'll give another player, and that's Alvin Kamara. And they, you know, he had, I believe, 10 targets this past week after having 6 combined targets in the 3 weeks prior to that. And a lot of his value was torpedoed with Taysom Hill coming in as quarterback. And hopefully, you know, we'll see if they get Drew Brees back this week, which would certainly help him, I think, return him back to the elite level he was playing at. But they play Kansas City as well this week. So there's a very good chance that they're coming from behind and will need to be passing the ball quite a bit once again. But Garner, anyone that stood out to you for this?
I think I actually had two people, like one kind of on each side of, again, expecting a lot and or expecting to do better and got disappointed. And the other one where it's like, all right, this can't last. And it has. First one is Matt Ryan. We talked about him last week, and I believe you guys actually had some confidence in him. I was like, all right, he's stumbling, but like he's going to get this. And I mean, over the last 4 games, he's only had 38.36 total points. He just is not performing right now. And it's, you keep saying like he's got the weapons and this and that, but like I'm just starting to lose confidence in him right now that like not being able to start him, I kept wanting to, but yeah, I'm going the opposite way there. And then someone that I did like is T.Y. Hilton. All year, he was just an afterthought. People were dropping him. They didn't care about him. And then a couple of games go, like he actually does well. And then he does well against Houston. And you think, yeah, whatever, it's Houston. Does good again this week. And who is he playing coming up now? They've got Houston again. He's rostered in 56% of sleeper leagues. I mean, that is a great wide receiver 3 option, at least. Mm-hmm. I think he's someone that is getting overlooked now and definitely could be picked up for this.
Yeah, he's super interesting. It's crazy because he had been so bad for so many weeks and now he's decided to turn it on.
Yeah, yeah, definitely it's a late season burst from him. But let's move on to our mental health minute. I think, Andrew, you're going to take us through this one today.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I think this is one of the original thoughts we had around doing this fantasy football mental health minute. Not that we wanted to bring up the same topic every week, but we wanted to extrapolate upon that. And that's just the, you know, the fact of when we do get so invested in our fantasy football teams and it comes right down to the wire, like especially in the fantasy football playoffs, we know there it comes out that there's a lot of bad beats on Monday Night Football. Obviously, the game last night was a thriller. It just went back and forth and back and forth. And I think that I think it helped a lot of people, but it hurt a lot of people as well. And just taking a step back, though, and realizing what a great game of football that was. And, you know, half the reason that we play fantasy is to enjoy and watch the football and marvel at these guys, you know, playing a sport at the, you know, the zenith of its of ability, like at the mountaintop, you know, like it just reminds me that it's just a game, like especially when you don't have anything at stake, just watching that and appreciating it So try not to get too caught up on the results, you know, of your fantasy teams, and hopefully you can move on to the next thing and enjoy the weeks ahead of football.
Yeah, most definitely. It's, you know, fantasy football, we've often said, can be a very frustrating and stress-inducing hobby to have, but there are, hopefully the highs are high enough to offset some of the lows.
And one thing I just want to pitch in here too, that I've had to tell myself pretty much every year, but I mean, it does help, is usually when you're in, for most formats, when you're in that loser's bracket, you just have to win one game. You can have a terrible week. Again, you can have a week like me where it's your best week, but it doesn't count. And it's annoying, but I just got to remember, again, like, I've got 2 weeks left. I just need to win one of them and I won't take last. For me, that's a big thing, is, again, not taking last. You just get that one win and you are out of that position to be in last place.
Yeah, the moral victory is important as well.
Without a doubt. Well, fantasy football can be frustrating, and we on this show like to vent about the players that absolutely shit the bed and ruin our week. So let's get into our DiGiorno Players of the Week. Garner, hit the music.
All right, Sam, I'm going first this week because tight end has been a shit show all year long. There haven't been any consistent scores for us outside of Travis Kelce and maybe Darren Waller. And this week, you know, no one helped you in the late round picks or the stashes, the waiver wire guys. No one, even the guys you could have some confidence in were shitty. Evan Engram, 4 targets, 2 receptions for 18 yards. I was starting to come on to him. Fucking Daniel Jones fucked that situation up. Noah Fant, I'm waiting for this boom game from him, and he gets fucking sick right before the game. No reps, 0 points. Rest in peace to his colon or whatever happened there, but he shit the bed. Literally, figuratively, whatever. Oh my god.
I think that might be Lamar Jackson, actually, but I'm going to take a little bit of a different spin here because Clyde Edwards-Helaire just absolutely also shit the bed this past week. And I had him at over 39.5 rushing yards this past week. And here's how his last 2 carries went. When he had 43 yards, -3 yard run. Okay, he's at 40, still over. And then a -8 fucking yard run to finish with 32 fucking yards. Come on. How do you have 2 negative yardage runs like that in a row? It was just absolutely atrocious. I was ready to mark that one as a win, and then he just...
Goddamn. Ugh. Well, you know,
it was gross.
That's your only loss all season, right?
I wish.
Only
I
loss
wish.
I've heard about. All right. I'm ready for the meat of this show.
Let's get into it. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be one of the guys that we talk about here. Quick spoiler alert. But we're going to be talking about some other bust players as well. And we're primarily going to be focusing on non-injured players. You can obviously talk about guys like CMC or... Kenny Golladay maybe, that have been injured for the majority of the year. But we are going to talk about guys who are underperformers relative to ADP, specifically in the games that we've played. And some of these guys have missed a game here or there. There are very few players, especially with all the COVID stuff going on, that haven't missed a game this season. But we're also going to be talking about these guys in terms of the ceiling games that they have. So what is sort of the high end of their outcomes that they've had? And we're going to define those as such for the following positions. So for quarterback, it's going to be games above 25 points. For running back and wide receiver, it's going to be games above 20 points. And then for tight end, it's going to be games above 15 points in half PPR scoring. So let's get right into it and start off with quarterback. We've got one guy we're going to talk about here, and this is Matthew Stafford, who I was sort of beating the opposite drum for all offseason. I was not a fan of him entering the season. He was being drafted as the quarterback 12. And I think a lot of that was people banking on him continuing his stretch of career high performances in the 8 games that he played in 2019. He currently sits as the quarterback 20 in points per game through week 14. He's only had one ceiling game, so one game above 25 points, but he's also had three other games above 22 points. I should note that the one 25-point game didn't come until week 13, so odds are if you drafted Matthew Stafford, you might have moved on from him before that was, you know, even in your lineup. But the question here is, does this continue? Had you know, Matthew Stafford throughout his entire career has sort of been a steady guy. He's never been elite of the elite, but he's always oftentimes finished in the top 10, at least in the seasons that he's finished. So does this start to signal sort of the tail end of his career as a usable fantasy football asset?
I would say yes. And to start off, I want to say I was on the opposite end of the or of what Sam's analysis was. And so it is a, you know, admission of that I was wrong on this one. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't be extrapolating game samples in general, unless we think they haven't yet hit their ceiling. But Stafford, because of his age, being age 33, and with the uncertainty of bringing in a new head coach, which could, you know, potentially bring in a new playbook, I definitely am not high on him going into next year. I think I'm going to continue to look at younger guys who have the potential to break out further. And I think a big part of that too is because of his downside in some of these games. Like, he had multiple games of single digits, multiple as in two, but those are two games where, you know, he couldn't even get you a modicum of points as a quarterback. So I really try to avoid that. And like, I love guys that can get me at least 20 points a week when I think about who I'm throwing in at quarterback. So even those like 14 and 16 point performances were not up to par for me. And so I think he was a bust. And I think a big part of that was because Kenny Golladay has been injured throughout the whole season. But obviously, you know, you can't predict that, but you can't expect that he's the only reason that Stafford's been like this.
Right. Because we've seen, I mean, that game in which he had over 25 fantasy points came without Kenny Golladay, and having, you know, in the games that Golladay has played, he's played near elite, near the level of expectation that we'd have for him. I think he, in the 5 games that he's played, he either had a touchdown or 100 receiving yards in every single one of those, or at least 4 out of 5. So he was playing especially well, and you could tell Stafford was starting to throw the ball a little bit deeper down the field when Golladay was on the field. So, you know, Golladay was someone I was out on. I was just sort of out on this offense as a whole. I'll potentially be excited to buy these guys low entering the 2021 season, depending on who they do bring in as the coach, because, you know, a lot of people will look at where Kenny Golladay finished and just, you know, sort of look at that and be like, oh, well, he finished outside the top whatever and didn't play that well, and not sort of factor in the injury aspect of things. But that's a different conversation. I still am not going to trust Stafford as a quarterback 1 next year. He'll be one of those guys that, you know, maybe you take a stab on in a 2 QB league, but he certainly has shown that he probably doesn't have the same ceiling that he had shown in the past.
Yeah, completely agree.
Let's move on to a couple of polarizing players. And we're going to start with one who was sort of the impetus for this discussion, because you had a rather fiery tweet earlier today. I'm pulling it up here, and
The impetus says, for the entire episode, right.
The impetus for the entire episode, yeah. He says, I think it's safe to say that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the biggest non-injury bust of 2020. Should we not have seen this coming from a rookie who drafted him in the first round, and how do you feel? And got a lot of reactions from people because he was the RB6 in ADP, but currently ranks as the RB21 in half PPR. He has one of the ceiling games that we mentioned, games above 20 points, and he does have two games above 18 fantasy points, which is still pretty good. But I'm just going to give the reins to you and let you start here because,
well, I thank
because
you,
I'm wondering Sam. What I'm wondering what sort of drew you to send the tweet and what you were thinking exactly, because and this isn't to say that I disagree with you. I'm just curious as to your thought process.
I thought about it last night, and then I guess I slept on it. Not like it was in my drafts or anything, but I was like, no, this doesn't, sleeping on it doesn't change how I feel. And for me personally, like, I think it's even harder for me to have a point because I only have them in one dynasty league.
A quick verbal meme here. Andrew, you know, laying over to the side. Heather is like, oh, I wonder what Andrew's thinking about. Is he thinking about other girls? And Andrew's like, oh, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire the biggest bust of 2020?
Oh, yeah. That's perfect. I guess I'm building it up to be more than it is just because it is like a tweet that got a lot of reaction. And I replied to a lot of people who either agreed or disagreed. And my biggest thing was like, I can't believe that this guy, like a promising player in the NFL overall, and I think a guy who I'm optimistic for in Dynasty, I'll say that outright. But a guy that coming into his rookie season was touted above all other rookie running backs as the best guy in the class to have for 2020 because he supposedly was, you know, going to have full reign of the backfield and was being drafted. When you say RB6, he was being drafted as like 106, 107, 108 in your fantasy drafts. And when I think about what I expect from a front half of the first round, like what I expect in that type of draft pick, it is more than one ceiling game as you defined it, or more than three games above 18 points. Like, I think those are some pretty solid games. I saw some good points in the tweet as well. And we retweeted this from our own, like from our podcast Twitter as well. So you can find it there. Like, he does have a really nice floor in hindsight, like a lot of double digit games in there, in half PPR. But even like, and this one thing I noted on there is like RB21, you know, he's around that range for points per game. And just looking at the points on aggregate, there are 20 other wide receivers in half PPR that have more fantasy points on aggregate than him, which could go into a totally different like zero RB argument. We don't need to get into that, but it's just the lack of ceiling that I really drew my eye to this and thinking like, I never wanted him in the first round. I probably would have only taken him at the beginning of the third round. And I can't imagine if you were a Clyde Edwards-Helaire owner that you'd be satisfied with his fantasy production. And I feel like when you're putting him in your lineup week in and week out, and he's not giving you any juice, that would be super frustrating. And that's why I think he's an even bigger bust, like one of, if not the biggest bust.
So one thing I responded to you with was the fact that, you know, a lot of the reason why people drafted CEH was the opportunity that he had. And for the first several months after the draft, he was being taken in sort of the second, third, maybe sometimes fourth round because Damian Williams was still there. And then, you know, and there was sort of this thought that Damian Williams would sort of start the season and then ideally Edwards-Helaire's talent would win out and make him the better running back. Then Damian Williams opted out, so that roadblock was absolutely gone. And Andy Reid has shown a willingness to give a running back a workhorse role. And, you know, people thought about Kareem Hunt, his rookie season with the Chiefs, and the success that he's had, and the times that Chiefs running backs, when they have gotten that workload, have been extremely successful. Now, things have changed, obviously, in the last 14 weeks since the season started. They brought in Le'Veon Bell, but, you know, even Le'Veon Bell right now is not that much competition from a talent perspective, and CEH is just not as efficient as we would have hoped, and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are just completely stealing the show in that offense. I think I mentioned it last week, but the Chiefs are passing so far, so much more above expectation than a normal team would be. So maybe in an offense that is running the ball a little bit more, or is even targeting the running back a little bit more, he has more upside. But he, to your point, I do agree. I don't know if I would place him as the biggest bust, but he certainly is. I would put him at that bust label, if you will.
I certainly think it's debatable. And obviously it wouldn't have gotten as much, the tweet wouldn't have gotten as much engagement if it wasn't a hot take from the start. So, I'm open to those other opinions on the biggest bust of the season. As a quick rebuttal to some of the things you said, like Kareem Hunt, I don't think it's blasphemous to say that Kareem Hunt might be a better running back talent than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, at least from what we've seen so far. And Kareem Hunt as a rookie was getting drafted in the third round because of that opportunity. I think the difference between him and Clyde Edwards-Helaire was largely the draft capital. Like, oh, the Chiefs drafted him with their first round pick, CEH. So that means he must be better than, you know, what Kareem Hunt did as a rookie, because that was, you know, Hunt was only like a fifth round pick. And so that kind of plays with our expectations. But then you compare him to like the Chiefs running backs of old, like, I don't think as a rookie he can just be the second coming of Jamal Charles, you know? Like, so I mentioned it on Twitter. I tend to fade rookies a little bit, sometimes more than I should. I think there are some interesting things going on with the situation for sure. And maybe, like you said, they are passing more often, and Edwards-Helaire wasn't able to carve out that role, which is why they brought Bell in. Hindsight is 2020. So.
Well, soon hindsight will be 2021. Let's get into our next player here, who had similar draft capital, and that's Ezekiel Elliott. He was being drafted as the RB3, as high as the running back two, sometimes the RB1 over McCaffrey. He currently ranks as the RB18 through week 14. He has two ceiling games and two other games above 18 points. So is doing a little bit better than CEH. And this comes with a little bit of a disclosure, if you will, in that, you know, the Dak Prescott injury just did not help anyone in this offense whatsoever. And that's an injury that cratered the value of the offense as a whole. So it's tough to put this performance, you know, Zeke's performance on just Zeke, because Dak was moving that offense. But I'm curious to hear your other thoughts as well.
Yeah, I wanted to just say that off the bat. A lot of people were chirping at me saying Zeke was the bigger non-injury bust, but Dak was, you know, Zeke was fine until Dak was injured, and then things tanked for him. So, you know, everyone has offensive line injuries affect their performance, but I think that Dak injury was a huge change in what happened to Zeke's season. But through those first 5 weeks, you were, you know, sitting pretty with Zeke in your lineup.
So I think the thing for me that makes this a little bit worrisome for the year, you know, future years to come, is that he has ceded more opportunities to Tony Pollard than I would have expected. And maybe that's Mike McCarthy's way of, you know, in a completely lost, not completely, but a lost season for the Cowboys, trying to test out their second year player. And they've obviously got Zeke tied up on this big contract, so he'll be around next year. But do we see a closer to a 50-50 split next year? I'll probably have Zeke ranked right outside, if not right around, the top 10 running backs next year, just because, you know, I'm not sure he has the volume that he's had in the past, but it's certainly interesting. It will be, you know, this could all change too. We don't know for sure that Dak will be back next year. To wrap up this running back conversation, I did run a poll earlier today asking which running back you'd rather have had on your team this season between Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Ezekiel Elliott, and Christian McCaffrey. Now, Christian McCaffrey has only played in 3 games, but he's had an average of 30 points per game in those 3 games. So,
hell yeah.
Let me hear your answer first, and then I'll talk a little bit more about my answer.
I mean, because I'm the one that tweeted about CEH, I'm inclined to say that I would rather have the weeks that won me a game. Like, give me 3 wins with Christian McCaffrey and figuring out the rest. Like, you could be someone that had McCaffrey and picked up Mike Davis because of the injury and went on to win multiple games. So give me McCaffrey here. The biggest thing for me was the Clyde Edwards-Helaire in your lineup and only getting you this floor level of points week in and week out.
I'm totally with you for those same reasons. I mean, when you had McCaffrey, you were starting him and he was an absolute stud for you. When you had Zeke and, you know, he had a couple down weeks and you still felt the need to start him because, you know, you spent this first round capital on him, or, you know, you see an uptick in his snap percentage or something like that, and you would just sort of regret it if you didn't start him. Whereas McCaffrey, he was just out, so you had to make other plans. And granted, it sucks that you didn't have him for those games, but you at least had, you know, hopefully had a replacement level player at his position, and, you know, that might have been higher than some of the piss poor games that Zeke and CEH gave you. But I'm glad we spent a lot about that, because I think that's, you know, a lot of the rationale behind a bust and which of these players you would rather have. So we're going to go through the wide receivers and tight ends a little bit more quickly here. First wide receiver is Julio Jones, who was being drafted as the wide receiver 3 overall and has a points per game rank of wide receiver 14. He's missed a couple of games this ceiling, as Julio Jones is wont to do, but he's got 2 of the ceiling games, no other games above 18 fantasy points. It's tough to say that he's a bust, but again, at this high of a draft capital, you're expecting him to at least be top 10 in points per game and have more of those ceiling games. And obviously, Calvin Ridley has had a phenomenal year that has sort of overshadowed Julio Jones.
Yeah, I was comparing CEH and Julio here because Julio is someone I would have drafted over CEH in redraft in August and September. The thing that sucks the most with this is that he played games, Julio did, and left with injury, or like he was just kind of playing decoy a couple games. So you're playing him because he's active, and we've said this before, if he's, you know, healthy enough to play, he's healthy enough to go off. But, you know, if he gets the injury mid game and leaves, then you've got these, you know, the 4.9, the 5.2, the 3.4 point performances in half point PPR, and that just sucks. Like, it was kind of okay when he was out because you could flex in a wide receiver, like we were saying with the other guys, and, you know, hopefully he had those 2 ceiling games, that at least one that helped you win your week. But It's tough because, you know, spinning this to 2021, as we mentioned, and he's going to be 32. It's hard to say that he definitely shouldn't be ranked higher than Calvin Ridley at this point. And it's hard for me to say that, but it's just the truth.
Yeah. To your point, you know, he had that 4-game streak, from week 6 through 9, where he scored at least 15 fantasy points in each of those games. So that was a very worthwhile stretch for you. But then he missed the Raiders game in week 12, you know, and you might have had some skepticism because, like you said, he had some games to that point where he left early, but then ended up having 15 points in week 13, which is pretty good. I think he's on the downturn of his career, should probably be ranked between wide receiver 15 and 20 for me, especially with a lot of the players we've seen break out this year. One player we saw break out last year is Chris Godwin. He had an exceptional season, finished, I believe, wide receiver 1 or 2 last year, depending on the scoring system you use. Had a wide receiver 6 ADP this past year, but currently ranks as the wide receiver 27 in half PPR through week 14. He's also missed a couple of games, but he has had 0 of the ceiling games that we've talked about and has had one other game above 18 fantasy points. He's a clear bust, and this is not something that you could have foreseen, especially, you know, again, with Antonio Brown being brought in, but we thought he was going to be the biggest beneficiary of Tom Brady coming in because of Brady's proclivity for throwing to slot receivers, and that just has not come to fruition. The Buccaneers have spread the ball out a lot more than the Bucs of old, which I think is the biggest reason for why these Bucs wide receivers have not lived up to expectation this year.
Yeah, it's so annoying, man, because you're right. Like, we thought this was a, you know, obvious smash for redraft, for dynasty, with Brady's proclivity for the slot. Like, he's just going to be a younger version of Julian Edelman for Brady. But, you know, Brady's getting a year older every year, too. The gradual decline is clearly happening, especially with his deep ball. And it's almost like, should we not have just said this doesn't pass the smell test? Like, I don't like Brady coming in here and trying to do what the expectations, or match the expectations that Jameis Winston put out there for us. And I'm like a Winston truther, so me trying to compare Brady to Winston is just asinine. But it is kind of wild to see this really affect Godwin. I mean, even from a without the injuries. The injuries do not help because he's had so many. But
I don't even think it's Brady's performance. I mean, he's on pace for 4,300 yards and 37 touchdowns. So not nearly as many yards as Jameis, but
it's because he loves Scotty Miller going in the slot and Antonio Brown that they pick up off the street just because Tom likes him for some reason. Like, it's very tilting, if you can't tell. You hit the nail on the head with spreading it out.
But yeah, I think that's the biggest concern. I mean, I wouldn't have any different expectations about him entering next season than him entering, you know, after he's finished up this season. But it's the way that offense is being run. Obviously, having Rob Gronkowski there as well is something that we didn't totally expect for most of the offseason. But let's wrap things up with a tight end conversation here about the dustiest of all dust tight ends in Zach Ertz. He had an ADP of tight end 4 and has a half PPR points per game rank of tight end 28. He's been scoring 5.5 points per game across the 8 games he's played. 0 ceiling games. 1 game with double-digit points he's obviously a bust. Is there any hope for Zach Ertz? I mean, this Eagles offense has just been atrocious, and Goddard seems to be like the guy moving forward.
Yeah, the Eagles offense being atrocious this year does not help the situation around this conversation. I think we had higher expectations for them, you know, because of their Super Bowl in recent years and whatnot. But my biggest question with this one, just around busts in general, is, you know, if a player is a bust and we project them to be a bust, so, you know, you or I don't draft them at all, does anyone care that he was a bust to begin with, or like that he ends up being a bust? Kind of like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? Like, because for me and you, like, someone brought up Ertz as a bigger bust than Edwards-Helaire. Obviously, I was going to defend my side on this, but I had to repress me just from saying, if you drafted Ertz in your league, then you were making a bad pick to begin with. And it's the same with guys like Leonard Fournette and Le'Veon Bell, who were busts at their draft capital for different reasons. But it's just like, well, I'm avoiding this guy at his ADP or altogether because I think he's going to be a bust. And then he busts. Like, I think he is still a bust, but when the people that drafted him shouldn't have been drafting him to begin with some of these busts.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to, you know, I'm looking at the list of tight ends and who might be at the top of the list next year, and I'm trying to come up with a reasonable comp for, you know, who might stick out for this. I mean, Travis Kelce, just because of the age, but, you know, he's been phenomenal and has been, he's leading the freaking league in receiving, which is unheard of.
Patrick Mahomes is like the fountain of youth for him. So it's,
yeah, which is unheard of for a tight end. And I think it's some of those other signs that we could have seen as far as Dallas Goedert maybe taking a bigger role, but it's certainly a tough one, and I won't be drafting Zach Ertz in any league next year.
Don't expect a resurgence, guys. Like, again, spinning the 2021.
Have any yards after the catch. So.
No, it's spinning into 2021. Like, I think we were seeing a pretty big decline from his peak year, like 2029 after 2028. Like, yes, we didn't expect him to match, 2018. But 2019 was such a precipitous drop off that I was like, he had some ceiling games, but I didn't really like him at all going into 2020. You mentioned Goddard being there. I'm glad that, you know, you and I avoided this bust. I think Garner did too. he's nodding on the screen. So the guy is still a bust because of his ADP, but it's just a huge signal to me that, like, some of these guys we have to fade like so hard just to get their ADP down to a reasonable expectation.
Okay, well, let's wrap this episode up as we always do with a couple start sits for week 15. We've got a couple players in here that we have talked about already this episode. The first one being Miles Sanders at the Arizona Cardinals or Cam Akers versus the New York Jets. I'm going to go with Sanders just because I think he's got a little bit of a higher ceiling. I don't think he has as much competition as Akers has, despite what we've seen in the past. And Sanders has much more involvement in the Eagles passing game.
I agree on Sanders here. I think that we've talked about the Jets before being this juicy matchup for running backs because of projected game script, but it seems like it's much easier to just pass on the Jets. So there's, you know, that's still potential for Akers to do well, but I'm going to go with Sanders.
All right. Our next one here is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the bust of the year at the New Orleans Saints, or J.K. Dobbins versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. Where are you leaning this way?
On this one, I am going to go with the matchup and the game script because I think J.K. Dobbins has been super efficient with the opportunities he has gotten. And the Saints need that defense to, you know, button up against the Chiefs if they have any chance of winning here. But the Chiefs could just also, you know, easily default to the pass. I'm sticking to my guns, J.K. Dobbins for the upside here.
I'm going to go with Dobbins as well. Mark Ingram played, I believe, one snap against the Browns in that Monday night thriller. So if it's just him and Gus Edwards in the backfield that, you know, the Ravens barely passed this past week. So Dobbins all the way. We could finally see that blow up game from him. Next up, we've got Cole Beasley, who's played pretty well of late at the Denver Broncos, or Nelson Agholor versus the Los Angeles Chargers on Thursday night. I'm going to go with Nelson Agholor. He has 9 or more targets in 3 of his last 4 games and is averaging 15 fantasy points per game in that span. So I'm ready for him to explode on Thursday night.
I believe I noticed that John Brown coming off injured reserve as well, which could take some more opportunity away from Beasley. So as gross as it sounds, and that's why I wanted to put him in here, but I think I got to put Nelson Agholor in the lineup as well, just rolling him into the flex and seeing what he can do.
Got another set of receivers here with Diontae Johnson at the Cincinnati Bengals, or a pair of Colts receivers in Michael Pittman or T.Y. Hilton versus the Houston Texans. I'm going to go with either of the Colts wide receivers, as successful as their running game has been. I think they'll be able to attack the Texans through the air pretty easily, and Johnson has obviously struggled with drops as of late, which could impact his playing time.
So are you going to go the Garner route and pick T.Y. Hilton from the, you know, the recency of his performance, or you think Michael Pittman is still the way to go? Because, you know, I'm looking at both of them in different leagues, so just obviously why I picked them for this.
I'll probably stick with T.Y. Hilton. I mean, T.Y. Hilton has just thrashed the Houston Texans, and
yeah,
he did it a couple weeks ago, so why not again?
They'll just lie down again for him. Okay, I'll go with T.Y. Hilton then, too. I want to keep the lock going here. I'd be worried about Johnson. I mean, he's kind of boom-bust with the opportunity he's gotten lately. I'll be really curious what your take is on this last one, though.
That Steelers offense looks a little bit defunct, but we've got a very, very, very gross tight end matchup here for this last one. If it's possible for me to abstain from voting, I will, but we've got Irv Smith Jr. versus the Chicago Bears, or Cole Kmet at the Minnesota Vikings. I actually feel pretty good about this now that I think about it. I'm going to go with Kmet. Prior to this past week, he looked like he was taking over Jimmy Graham for the top spot in the tight end room for the Bears. So I'm going to go with Kmet with a little bit of conviction there.
I tweeted last week that Cole Kmet was my must-stash player of the week. Tweeted a picture of myself with a mustache, so I will stick with Kmet as well. I know Irv Smith scored like 16 PPR points or something this last week, but I feel like he's had more variance in his game. I saw him on the waiver wire. You know, Sam, I know this is a gross question, but there are people out there who have George Kittle on their IR, and they're still somehow in their fantasy playoffs trying to figure out, who the fuck do I start at tight end? And so I had to put this one in there just to get your opinion, but I think I'm rolling Kmet as well.
Okay. Well, hopefully that I'm just realizing we were 5 for 5 on the same decisions.
Oh yeah. I didn't give these much thought after creating them, so I almost just followed what you did.
All right. Well, we're at week 15. That's sort of how things go, but had a great time, great episode today for Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, for Ryan Garner at Garnther. You can follow me on Twitter at Sam Hoppin. You can follow our podcast account at Pod After TD. And with that, the Justin Tucker kick is good.